Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is my Wednesday Dhamma talk from June 13th, 2018. My talk is on the seven factors of enlightenment as presented in the Galana Sutta. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
Well, good morning, friends. Today's talk is on the seven factors of enlightenment. And the Buddha taught the seven factors of enlightenment in many different suttas. Today we'll focus on the Galana Sutta, and I'll mention another sutta called the Devadatta Sutta. But all these suttas, all the Buddha's teachings on mindfulness and what to hold in mind as Dhamma practice is rooted in what he awakened to and in the context of Four Noble Truths. And so let me lay that foundation first. The Buddha awakened to the truth that it is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that through 12 observable causative links all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering arises. That teaching is primarily taught in the Paticca-samuppada Sutta, the Sutta on Dependent Origination, and many, many other suttas where the Buddha mentions that process of ignorance of Four Noble Truths resulting in all manner of suffering, all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing disappointing experiences. And he taught that for the first time, that understanding, the path away from ignorance and developing wisdom and understanding of Four Noble Truths in his very first teaching, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, where he established the Four Noble Truths as the context and foundation for his entire Dhamma, and as the path, the fourth noble truth is the path leading to the cessation of ignorance or development of wisdom, as the Eightfold Path. The Buddha taught no other path, and I may mention that later on. He taught a singular path for a singular purpose to end ignorance of Four Noble Truths. He wasn't concerned about anything else, and he mentions it even in these suttas. He wasn't concerned about any rites or rituals or beliefs that would distract one from ignorance. And that's really an important understanding of an application, or the Buddha's application, of mindfulness. So the mindfulness means to hold in mind or to recollect. Within the framework of the Buddhist teachings, what that means is to hold in mind or to recollect each factor of the Eightfold Path in order to integrate that within us as the framework for living our lives and developing an awakened quality of mind. An awakened quality of mind simply means a fully mature human being, one who completely understands the nature of human life. Everything the Buddha taught was taught in a practical way. It's a teaching of how to live the most meaningful and fulfilling human life that anyone could possibly live in this lifetime. And this is what the Buddha is concerned about. And I realize that what I'm saying contradicts a lot of what modern Buddhism is rooted in and founded on. But of course, that's what has developed over the past 2,600 years and bears very little resemblance to what an awakened human being actually taught. And I always have to qualify that. I'm not denigrating all these other modern Buddhist practices that and lineages that claim a direct connection to the Buddha, but a careful examination of the preserved teachings of the Buddha, meaning what is preserved in the Sutta Pitaka of the Pali Canon, the second book of the Pali Canon, shows clearly and consistently throughout the Buddha's teaching career this singular purpose of recognizing and abandoning ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Another way of saying that is the Buddha's teachings on emptiness, to empty oneself of ignorance. That emptiness, as the Buddha teaches, is not some vague amorphous plane of existence that we aspire to. It's an emptiness that we experience right now within us, meaning that we actually empty ourselves of ignorance, much like we might empty a dirty glass or water, a glass of dirty water. We would empty it out before we would partake of it. That's the kind of mindfulness that the Buddha talks about. Last night in our class in Frenchtown, I gave a talk on the Sadaka Sutta, and then which is another teachings on mindfulness. You could really say that every sutta the Buddha ever taught has the underlying theme of appropriate mindfulness. Last night we referenced the exact application of mindfulness, and I'll touch on that later. So again, what is important to really take from what I've just said and what the Buddha teaches on mindfulness is the importance of understanding how mindfulness works. In other words, what we hold in mind, what we associate with in our minds, it will determine the experience of our life, and it will also determine whether or not we'll actually be able to awaken. So understanding the distractions caused by ignorance is another reason why the Buddha taught a very simple and direct, but all encompassing, a complete practice. I'm talking about the Eightfold Path now. So the out of that initial ignorance of Four Noble Truths, leading to all manner of suffering, the Buddha first presented Four Noble Truths, which simply states, the First Noble Truth states that dukkha occurs. As a consequence of having a human life, there will be confusion, there will be deluded thinking, there will be ongoing disappointing experiences. The Second Noble Truth states very clearly that craving originates and clinging perpetuates this ongoing quality of mind that results in suffering and ongoing suffering or stress. The Third Noble Truth states very clearly that cessation of that internal process of creating distraction and ongoing stress in our lives is possible. And he concluded the Four Noble Truths with the most important statement of all time, that it is an eightfold path that leads to the cessation of all confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering. So the mindfulness in a general way that the Buddha taught is to be mindful of the factors of the Eightfold Path. And that's exactly how the Buddha teaches mindfulness. When describing mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, the teachings of the Buddha are so simple and direct. And he states that it is to be mindful when in wrong view and enter and remain in right view. To be mindful when in wrong intention, to enter and remain in right intention. And he relates that instruction to each factor of the Eightfold Path, to know when we're on the wrong side or the unskillful side of those eight factors, and enter, to use our mindfulness to bring right within us the understandings of right view, right intention, right speech, action, livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right meditation. So those using those words, right implies that there's wrong. Another way you could say that is skillful and unskillful, because developing the Dhamma is really developing the proper skills to hold in mind what we must if we're going to awaken. Now, if we're not interested in developing awakening as a human being awakened, then of course we can get into any type of practice that suits our proclivities and what we hope to get out of a so-called spiritual practice. But it's important to remind ourselves and just to understand that we're not practicing what an awakened human being taught. And that was a constant. The Buddha spent nearly as much time teaching what his Dhamma wasn't as he was teaching exactly what it wasn't. And so I'm going to mention, I'll read the Gaulana Sutta and then an excerpt from a sutta called the Devadatta Sutta that shows us very, very clearly what is most important to hold in mind. Now, these seven factors of enlightenment are mentioned in many suttas, and most prominently, said that bodes. Most prominently, my boy, he's a little bit on. He likes to get on camera. Most prominently in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, and again another important and very misunderstood sutta, the Anapanasati Sutta, where the Buddha uses the examples of senior and well-accomplished monks as an example of Dhamma practice. And that sutta is often taken as instruction for how to meditate and gets into these long, drawn-out practices that the Buddha never taught. But in both of those suttas and many other suttas, he mentions that that we first develop concentration, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. The initial instruction in that is what to do during meditation. And then from that well-concentrated mind, the Buddha goes through a series of important mindfulness practices, things to hold in mind to completely develop awakening. And in those suttas, the Buddha will mention the seven factors of enlightenment and conclude those suttas with what's most important to hold in mind is the Four Noble Truths. So, lay down. Good boy. So let me, I'll read the Galana Sutta first. And I'll comment as I go along and how this applies to what I've just said. One evening, the Buddha, while lying ill, was approached by Sariputta's younger brother, Kunda. The Buddha spoke directly to Kunda to plant the seed of understanding in his mind. Venerable Kunda, let these seven factors of enlightenment arise in your mind. These seven factors of enlightenment are well expounded and are cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Even that the word, and obviously these are translations from the Pali to English, but the choice of words is important. Cultivated, it means that this is something that we do within ourselves, and with the right seed, with the right moisture, referring to something called the Loka Sutta, where the Buddha references that in that way, that we cultivate awakening within us. And we're the gardeners. What we put into the ground of our own minds, again, this is an aspect of mindfulness, will determine whether or not we'll awaken, whether or not we will be able to actually develop an Eightfold Path. And this is very specific. Again, the Buddha kept reiterating over and over again how to practice and how not to practice. And it's so important. It seems like we're so afraid today to look at any of the so-called negative aspects. And if we just focus on what's positive in our lives, that somehow that's all that will manifest. But the underlying motivation there is to ignore what's actually occurring. And that is the defining aspect of the Buddha's Dhamma, to cease ignoring what we're ignorant of, to be mindful of what's there and what's not there. That's the essence of mindfulness. So we must be able to bring that into mind rather than avoid it through the constant compulsive need for positive thinking and only hold positive thoughts, to be willing to go into the actual problem. And that's another aspect of mindfulness. So the Buddha taught in a way that is characterized as via negativa, meaning that we must be willing to look at and acknowledge the negative, the unskillful aspects of our behavior and our demeanor and what we're holding in mind, if we're to recognize them and eliminate them. We have to be able to, in other words, would be to confront them in a meaningful way within the proper framework. So let me continue the sutta. When cultivated and fully developed by one awakened, they bring perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. Nibbana is another Pali word that means to extinguish. And this relates to how the Buddha taught what happens when we're rooted in wrong views. We develop the fires of passion for continually reestablishing our own ignorance that allows for these wrong views. So nibbana, meaning to extinguish the fire, is extinguishing the fires of passion rooted in ignorance. What are these seven? These are the seven factors of enlightenment. Mindfulness is a factor of enlightenment. Mindfulness is carefully taught by the Buddha. Mindfulness is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Mindfulness brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. So the first factor of enlightenment is mindfulness. But again, this isn't a general mindfulness. It's not simply being mindful of washing the dishes or even mindful walking, which is often presented as meditation, when it's simply an aspect of mindfulness that, if not rooted in the mindfulness that developed through an Eightfold Path, is simply another, at least potentially distracting exercise. In other words, we can walk around continually throughout our lives being mindful of our feet touching the ground, but never addressing the problem of ignorance. In fact, when it's engaged in that way, when you substitute, for example, mindful walking as your Dhamma practice or as an important aspect or overarching aspect of your Dhamma practice, you're ignoring the rest of the Buddha's teachings. In fact, you're substituting something that is not what the Buddha taught. Mindful walking, mindful washing the dishes, mindful driving, mindful anything is a development that comes from integrating the Eightfold Path and applying that mindfulness in everyday mundane activities. But the everyday mundane activities are not a substitute for developing the Eightfold Path. There's even notions of 14 different mindfulness practices is something that's kind of famous today. That's great if you want to follow that lineage, but it should be understood that that's not the type of mindfulness that the Buddha taught. He taught it very specifically and consistently throughout his teaching career. So that type of mindfulness that I just mentioned, it's good to be mindful of whatever we're doing, but that mindfulness is simply an extension of right mindfulness developed through the Eightfold Path. The next factor of enlightenment, of awakening, is investigation of the Dhamma as a factor of enlightenment. Investigation of the Dhamma is carefully taught by the Buddha. Investigation of the Dhamma is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Investigation of the Dhamma brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. Again, if we're going to develop a Buddha's Dhamma, it makes sense that we should investigate his Dhamma. And the implication here that being mindful of other dharmas or other teachings and incorporating that into the Buddha's teachings is an aspect of wrong mindfulness. Again, the Buddha taught a very specific Dhamma. It wasn't something that encompasses every belief and every wrong view and tries to reconcile into one amorphous soup of really what would be then a soup of wrong views. He taught to recognize and abandon wrong views rooted in ignorance so that one can awaken. An investigation, study of his Dhamma is most important. When we start studying or incorporating other dharmas and calling it Buddhism, we're altering and adapting and accommodating and embellishing the Buddha's Dhamma that it simply cannot withstand. It's not meant to do that. The Buddha was very specific in this. And again, as Buddhists, as people developing the Dhamma, we would want to do it in a way that an awakened human being taught. And these teachings relate to that. Again, he's teaching how to develop the Dhamma, but also how not to. The next one is persevering effort is a factor of enlightenment. This is you could also look at this as right effort. Persevering effort is carefully taught by the Buddha. Persevering effort is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Persevering effort brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. So again, the Buddha is recognizing, as he's continuing to teach, the difficulties that other members of his Sangha and people that come in and out of the Buddha's life seeking understanding, the difficulties that they are falling in, the traps that are there. And this relates to associating ourselves with other practices. Persevering effort or right effort is holding in mind the path leading to awakening and engaging in one's right effort to do that and only that. It's a mind that is rooted in ignorance that compulsively grasps at anything else to continue to distract itself and maintain its own ignorance. Or another way of saying that is to ignore our own ignorance. The Buddha taught these factors of enlightenment and an Eightfold Path to recognize and abandon that type of ignorance, ongoing ignorance. Joyful engagement in the Dhamma is a factor of enlightenment. Joyful engagement is carefully taught by the Buddha. Joyful engagement in the Dhamma is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Joyful engagement in the Dhamma brings perfect understanding, full realization in the Nibbana. This type of joyful enthusiasm is important to cultivate. Many of us come to any type of spiritual practice because we feel that there's a void missing in our life, or this we're trying to fix a broken self, or things just don't make sense, and that's fine as an initial motivation, but it's important to recognize that we have now come across, and this is one of the most remarkable things in my life, that the Buddha's original teachings, as first presented 2,600 years ago, continue to be available to us in their pure and unadulterated form. And that's enough for joyful engagement, that these simple and direct practices are still extant in the world today, and we can discover them and develop them if we're willing to apply right mindfulness, meaning a mindfulness that holds in mind the factors that the Buddha taught and holds in mind or dismisses or avoids adapting or accommodating his Dhamma in any way. Lay down, folks. Tranquility is a factor of enlightenment. Tranquility is carefully taught by the Buddha. Tranquility is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Tranquility brings perfect understanding and full realization in the Bana. Again, using that word cultivated, tranquility is not something that spontaneously occurs in a mind that's rooted in ignorance. Tranquility is developed in a mind that has recognized and abandoned all views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. The right meditation, that eighth factor of the Eightfold Path, is Shamatha Vipassana meditation. The Buddha consistently taught one meditation practice throughout his 45 years for the singular goal of developing a well-concentrated mind that supports the refined mindfulness necessary to hold in mind the eight factors, all eight factors of the Eightfold Path. And I use the word refined mindfulness because it is the entire Eightfold Path that refines our mindfulness to the point where we are no longer distracted by ignorance. Let me continue. Concentration is a factor of enlightenment. Concentration is carefully taught by the Buddha. Concentration is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Concentration brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. The next factor is equanimity. Equanimity is a factor of enlightenment. Equanimity is carefully taught by the Buddha. Equanimity is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Equanimity brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. Again, this last factor, the seventh factor of the Eightfold Path, is something that we should initially be mindful of. If we had a mind that is fully resting in equanimity, we are then awakened, and we have developed a path. For those just beginning, just entering into a true Dhamma practice, our minds are not very equanimous. Our minds are not often resting in equanimity. But it's something to be mindful of as a way of comparing what quality of our minds that we're holding right now, as opposed to that, to the idea, to what we're cultivating our minds towards. And so it's important to recognize when our minds aren't resting in equanimity, and to hold in mind, to be mindful of that seventh factor of awakening, to develop a mind that is resting in equanimity. What does that mean? It's a mind, and it relates directly to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, to be mindful of the present quality of mind. As we're developing awakening, the present quality of our mind is always changing and always reacting to our own reaction to feelings and thoughts and the events around us. An awakened human being, a human being's mind who is resting in equanimity, is a mind that is at peace no matter what is occurring around him. And this even relates to, again, many other suttas in the Siddhaka Sutta that I talked about last night. The Buddha continues, these seven factors of enlightenment are carefully taught by the Buddha, and all seven are cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. These seven factors of enlightenment bring perfect understanding, full realization, and awakening. Therefore, train yourselves to continue to abandon clinging to material gain, clinging to status, clinging to offerings, clinging to unskillful ambitions, and clinging to unskillful associations. These instructions here are a theme that the Buddha continually taught throughout his teaching career. A simple way of saying this is it is as important to be mindful of what is present, what is to be held in mind, as it is to be mindful of what's not present and what we should eliminate or empty ourselves of, meaning any view rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. That's the true teaching on emptiness. I just want to touch on another sutta briefly, just to make this point, and then I'll conclude this morning's talk. This is an excerpt from the Devadatta Sutta. Devadatta was a cousin of the Buddha's who gained a little bit of knowledge and understanding through listening to the Buddha, but he also was still deeply rooted in a confused and deluded state. He had developed some qualities of mind that, and I'm talking about so-called psychic powers, that led him to believe that he was, and those development of psychic powers, you know, however you loosely want to describe that, worked in Devadatta's mind to think that he was superior. He had a superior knowledge than the Buddha, and he wanted to establish his own following. And so that type of confused thinking actually led him to conclude that it would be best for him to kill his cousin, to kill the Buddha. He tried twice, and he failed both times. But he had developed a certain amount of followers. They say about 500 followers. And the Buddha heard of these plots. Obviously they failed. And so the Buddha's now teaching what had happened. Why did Devadatta continue to get more and more confused? What was the cause of that? And so the Buddha teaches, and this is extracted from the Devadatta Sutta, distracted by 8 untrue dhammas, his mind overcome, Devadatta is headed for a state of further ignorance and confusion. 8 untrue dhammas that poor Devadatta had incorporated into his mind. Now, of course, these didn't just simply pop into his mind without any cause. He was actually seeking and studying all the different spiritual practices of his time, and because his motivation for developing a spiritual practice was rooted in ignorance and self-referential thoughts to continue in eye-making and conceit, he attempted to incorporate all these different practices into his own dharma, and now he's going to be this teacher with this great knowledge. And all of those, to use the word, all those evil or confused and deluded thoughts caused him to ignore his own cousin and an awakened human being's teachings. In his mind, and this is an important teaching on mindfulness, what Devadatta was holding in mind, what he was mindful of, was continuing a self-referential, ego-based, eye-making existence, rather than listening to an awakened human being practicing his Dhamma and diminish all views rooted in ignorance and diminish eye-making. So he substituted so-called spiritual practices to do just what the Buddha, to avoid just what the Buddha was teaching, to recognize and abandon his own ignorant views. So he felt completely justified because the practices that he was incorporating in his mind were taught by many different people as spiritual practices. So it seems reasonable to him. The compulsive need today, and it's taught by so many modern Buddhist teachers, to reconcile all the different Buddhist teachings, and some even talk about reconciling all different religions into one cloudy, amorphous soup that holds in mind all these different competing and contradictory ideas. This is something that Devadatta did, and it so poisoned his mind that he thought it was reasonable to kill the Buddha. What has occurred is, in effect, to kill the Buddha's Dhamma, because so many people, I mean myself included, are so confused about what Dharma practice is, and they can never get to the heartwood of the Dhamma, which is what the Buddha taught, and the heartwood of the Dhamma always refers to the Eightfold Path. Let me just go back to the beginning, then I'll read this through. Distracted by 8 untrue dhammas, his mind overcome, Devadatta is headed for a state of further ignorance and confusion. Which 8? Distracted by clinging to material gain. Distracted by clinging to lack of material gain. Distracted by status. Distracted by lack of status. So look at this mind that the Buddha is describing. It's constantly in a state of turmoil, seeking status, being upset that it's not getting the status that it deserves, seeking material gain. When you fall into that trap of eye making, there's never enough. A mind rooted in ignorance of 4 noble truths can never be satisfied. That's the essence of dukkha, no matter what material gain you might acquire. Distracted by offerings of praise and goods. If you look at a lot of the trappings today, the efficacy of one so-called dharma is often presented by the cloaks of what it has allowed that practice to gain. The baubles, distracted by offerings of praise and goods, distracted by clinging to ambition, distracted by unwholesome associations. His mind overcome, Devadatta is headed for a state of further ignorance and confusion. It's for this compelling reason that one should keep abandoning clinging, craving, and any unwholesome association and unwholesome friendship. So again, the Buddha is teaching, and this is another underlying theme throughout the Buddha's Dhamma, the importance of who and what we associate with, because who and what we associate with will determine what we experience in our lives. And if we are truly interested in developing what an awakened human being taught, it makes sense that we would associate with what that human being actually taught and associate with people that are developing what that awakened human being taught. The implication is also to be mindful of not associating, as far as Dhamma practice, with other practices that's proved to be simply more distraction and only mask our own ignorance. So the Buddha continues, "You should train yourself. I will keep abandoning again and again any clinging to material gain, any clinging to lack of material gain, any clinging to status, any clinging to lack of status, any clinging to offerings of praise and goods, any clinging to offerings of praise and goods, any clinging to ambition, any clinging to unwholesome friendship." That is how you should train yourself. That's the end of that excerpt from the sutta. So this mindfulness that the Buddha taught, reflected in these seven factors of mindfulness, in a practical way, then leads us to, or guides us to how to choose what we're going to associate with and who we're going to associate with. And again, now I'm talking about our Dhamma practice. The singular importance of a well-focused Sangha to develop awakening, to form one of the three refuges, is so important. If we continue to associate with rituals and practices and ideals and ideologies that are contrary and are only the distraction, it's that association, what we're holding in mind, that will prevail, and we'll never get to the heartwood of the Dhamma. So as those of us that are developing awakening, and of course it's the only thing that I teach is what can be found in the Sutta Pitakas, is the entire Dhamma practice. What we hold in mind will determine what we experience within the Dhamma practice, within a Dhamma practice, an authentic Dhamma practice, and then in general in our life. So if we want to be mindful while we're washing the dishes or walking or driving the car or simply having a conversation with someone or any other mundane activity, if we want to be truly mindful in those situations, we'll develop the Eightfold Path and mindfulness as an awakened human being taught mindfulness, which is very specific and very refined. It's rooted in concentration developed through Shamatha Vipassana meditation and framed by the Eightfold Path. So, of course, as the Buddha teaches here, one of the factors of enlightenment, study of the Dhamma is an aspect of mindfulness that cannot be ignored, overlooked, or embellished in any way. But if we do these simple things, if we actually follow this amazing and simple and direct Eightfold Path, an awakened human being says, we will awaken. That's today's talk. I hope you found benefit from it. If you did, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com, and I will post another video Dhamma talk next Wednesday. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.